You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang, Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Hey, hey, kids.
And me, Brian, to my second week of having a tickly cough, and, well, more than a tickly cough. I just feel the tickle at the moment as I'm talking. That's how I'm...
Okay. Well, tickle is better than potentially lethal it was last week.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how the cough goes. It's not been sounding too great today. And I sound more gravelly today than I did yesterday.
Maybe this is just your life now.
I hope not. apparently, yeah, though, the doctor won't see me till I've had it for 2 weeks.
Come back when you're really sick.
Yeah, he had his podcast like on record, so we can time it exactly.
Yes.
Okay.
This is how my voice has been sounding over the past couple of weeks. Righty-ho, I'm now going to quickly turn myself down so I can have a little cough. And then I'm back.
Amazing.
Right, let's start with Picotaro's Lullaby Lullaby, Episode 6, The North Wind and the Sun. We're back to Aesop's Fables.
Mm.
In which the North Wind and the Sun are having a discussion about who can get this guy to take his coat off.
And the North Wind is saying, I'm the top rated wind or something like that.
Yes.
As winds go, I'm pretty good.
Mm. But something is amiss.
Yes.
Somebody is cheating.
No, it's coincidence. I did like that excuse. That's one of the few ones where Picotaro doesn't... He's involved, but not by... He's not getting involved in the stupid dialogue for once.
No, yeah. just this strange man who appears to be helping the North Wind cheat in this competition by physically trying to pull the man's coat off, and also when the sun is trying to get the coat to be removed, forcing him to put the coat back on again.
Well, it took me a second there because for a moment I thought, is he trying to take it off again, but in a more sexy way? He's coming up behind him and kind of putting his arms around his waist, and it's like, oh no.
it's just a bear hug.
Yeah, I think this had the funniest drawings of the show.
It had
so
more
far.
Drawings than it's had so far. Each episode has more and more drawings nearly.
It's establishing the audience, so now they gotta give them what they want.
They got a crazy budget. Like, okay, go boys, you have one more drawing this week. Make it count. And they're doing a good job of it.
Not much more to add than that. I recognize the story. It was one I did remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the moral was. I was trying to remember what the moral was of the original one. Obviously, this has no moral other than Picotaro will fuck with shit.
I believe it's supposed to be that persuasion is better than force.
Oh, I thought it might have been like more than one way to do a thing or something. Yeah.
Oddly enough, I was watching the first episode of Star Wars Crusaders before to get some image references off of. And of course, Avdol will just happen to mention that he's like trying to burn Jojo out of prison cell.
I think that still counts as force.
Mm-hmm.
Next up is Bono Bono, episode 11. Raccoon looks for a house because he's fed up of his dad kicking him. Because his dad is annoyed that Raccoon keeps on sticking his tail in his face when he's asleep.
But it's a very small house, Brian.
It is, yes. And they are very big, bushy tails.
Yeah, and he's a big lad now. Should be getting out on his own world anyway. So it's about time, if you ask me.
Yeah, so he's going from tree to tree. What's he say? He doesn't like trees and he doesn't like grass or something. So he wants to find a good hole in a tree to live in. But they keep coming across ants and various other impediments.
But Big Sister Sho gives them a tip off that the forest to the south has got some very good trees. But whatever you do, don't go to the forest to the west because it's full of ants. But then Raccoon's like, I'm onto your trick, Big Sister Sho. I'll go to this West Forest because clearly you're trying to trick me.
Yeah, because Bono Bono and Chipmunk are going, but why are we going the wrong way? Lads, if I told you to go to the South Forest, would you listen to me? Well, you actually know, yeah, you've got us there, Raccoon, yeah.
And then he slowly realizes, wait a minute, you fuckers don't trust me. dear.
And so if I was a nice big tree, which obviously someone had lived in previously, because
it's got bedding down and everything. Bedding down
in it, but no one's there at the moment. So he thinks it's got a much better view than his old house, but then he sees in the view that his dad is coming, storming down the road towards him.
I thought for a second he'd went back to exactly the same tree, or that was going to be the
thing. I did.
Because I was like, hold on a sec.
How did he not know where he lived?
Because the dad's acting like this is perfectly normal thing to do.
But I did like the dad's explanation. It's of like basically saying, you don't get to make your own decisions yet.
Yeah, I'll tell you when you're grown up. That kind of thing.
You're my baby boy, and I'll fucking slap you around the head in under the same roof if I want to.
I feel like it's trying to talk about the love of a father for a son without being able to admit it or something.
Yes, I think that's correct. And then, of course, they both get attacked by ants during the night.
Yeah, because it was a double blind is what she was pulling on.
Because we get that cutaway to all the horrible chipmunks who all sleep in the same house.
I wonder why Chipmunk moved out. It was what I was thinking at the end. I was like, yeah, I know exactly why the fuck he moved. dear.
And so they go back to their old house. The end.
What would the moral be? Dad knows right.
make sure you viewed your apartment first before you signed the contract.
Free will is an illusion. I don't know, something like that.
No place like home. It's all those things.
Yeah.
Next up is Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 49, A Certain Shinobi's Matchlock Gun. And what's this guy's name? I forgot to...
Oh, shite.
That one Koga ninja that Chiri beat up all those episodes ago.
And eventually he will be buried up to his neck with a saw left next to it.
Well, see, the problem, again, he suffers the problem of being a named ninja in history.
That is
which
true.
Means he's a bad ninja.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so he's been practicing and practicing and practicing with a matchlock gun, and he can shoot flies as they're passing by.
He's been shooting Nobunaga's family crest or something?
Yes, yeah.
Or their standard or whatever it is. But he doesn't know what Nobunaga looks like.
He does know that he wears a foreign cape, and then we cut to Nobunaga giving Mitsuhide his own cape to wear.
Pretty sweet cape, right? he gave it to me, and you're like, oh, I see where this is going.
But, it doesn't go that way, though.
Yeah, that was nice.
Because he spots him, in the parade going past, and it's like, I just want a cape, but it doesn't seem like it really kind of fits him, doesn't really kind of, like, ennoble him,
He doesn't really have any class.
He isn't giving off the kind of, like, imposing aura. Now, there's a guy who doesn't wear a cape.
That guy with the intense fucking stare. Yeah, that's him. Mm. Okay, so he wasn't just going by the cape thing. And Chidori has to do a Mr. President, no! which works out pretty fine, because ninjas keep their weapons close to their heart.
That is correct.
Well, they keep them everywhere, like under their clothes, so she's
covered in weapons.
Cover up most of your vital organs.
She's covered in weapons, but that doesn't stop your man from copping a feel like her friend ninja helper guy. I keep forgetting his name. Oh, dear.
I think that's pretty well. They're just the reason this is happening is because they're trying to go through that alternate route to get back to Gifu, isn't it? Or is it going to go from Gifu to Kyoto or Kyoto to Gifu?
They're trying to get to Gifu.
Yeah,
because their other route has been cut off due to various different rivalries. Oh, and that matchlock ninja guy is working for those guys. I think he takes apart the castle that they're in by. Was it shooting at it, or because it's very ramshackle?
It did. I thought it was just so shoddily made that the one shot fired indoors caused the whole roof to collapse.
Yeah.
I know.
So I don't see them putting up much of a fight, but
Is that episode title play in that light novel series A Certain Scientific Railgun?
I believe it may well be. Yes.
Oh wow, that's okay.
Yeah, I don't know whether that's a joke solely for the anime or something, which was in the comic.
Hmm.
Yeah. Besides the both involved guns, there's actually very little crossover, actually a lot, so it's quite a set.
Just the wording,
Here's a silly comic and puffy episode title.
Yeah, for all I know, that thing is that title is a pun in the first place. Who knows?
Mm. Yeah, maybe.
Not me.
Or, well, I don't know. It just sounds like a kind of overwrought light novel title. So,
that is true, yes.
That's already a joke.
It's not that overwrought. There's no semicolon. There's just, not like three sentences.
That was kind of early on when in the whole thing began. But now, yes. Nowadays it seems like a race to see who can come up with the most bizarre, long-winded, overly full with adjectives.
That's how you get the punters. It's like, wow, that's a big title. It must be a big book. It's like, ah, you fool, it's a light novel. You've been tricked by the long title method. Oh, dear.
Yes, long-windedness is the new snappiness.
And then finally, a returning champ. It's Shonen Ishibe Go Go Gamachan, episode 46, Woof Woof Gamachan.
We thought it was gone, but it's back.
Yes. There's another new episode this week as well. Yeah, Ishibe has entered Gamachan in a dog talent contest.
It's a dog show. There's a lot of like talents and stuff on display. Yeah,
He's disguised him as a dog, and
like he's in a dog suit, so he has like fake back legs. I assume his tail is in the fake dog tail, but I'm not sure how it fits.
Because the prize is, of course, ice pops, and
yeah, a year's supply. Why wouldn't you enter?
And their main rival is a dog called Brian.
Yeah, some sort of a Doberman type situation.
Yeah.
I've forgotten the kid's name, the really smarmy kid.
Yeah, I didn't write his name down. I don't know whether he's going to be back.
I mean, like, obviously Brian's going to be the memorable one there.
Yes. And everyone else got names as well, all the other dogs. But, yeah, Brian was the memorable one. And, yeah, it eventually comes out that Gamachan is not, in fact, a dog. And we get that very heartfelt apology from Ishibe.
Because he's too pure.
Yes. Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of when you have like the pop singers or the idol singers in Japan when they get caught doing human things like having a boyfriend. The guy come out and do his apology for all their fans
because he's on stage, he's pouring his heart out and he's apologizing that he did wrong, and the kind of the spotlight closing in on the drop mic, that kind of thing.
The way it shot is amazing, which is a good reminder coming back to this. It's like, this is a really well made, good looking show.
yeah, because it's so simplistic, it's easy to forget. Like,
but then they realize that everybody's now dressed up as like a seal,
because did you know in English that seals are called sea dogs?
No,
they're fucking not. That's bullshit. You're thinking of pirates are sea dogs. It's different. It was just him trying to use his fake knowledge of English to make everybody happy, I suppose. And then the best dog wins the competition, so that was nice.
Yeah,
I mean, said that, I did just look up seals, sea dog, and there are people who are saying that seals are the dogs of the sea.
I thought he meant in England. Maybe it's an American thing, or
in Arabic seals are called, and then that's in Arabic, which literally translates to sea dog also.
Well, had he translated it to Arabic, he would have been correct.
But here, from barkpost.com, are seal pups and real pups actually related? Whether you prefer to call them dog mermaids, sea puppies, or dogs of the sea, there is no denying that seals bear a striking resemblance to man's best friend on land.
Well, if you put some ears on them, then yes, you do.
Well, there's a picture here.
And if it had back legs, yeah.
Of a dog dressed as a seal. But not the other way around.
dear.
Yeah, so it's the bully has been doing loads of sewing in this episode as well. Making all these
He's apparently gotten very good at sewing because he really threw those costumes together pretty quick. And also he made Gamachan like a really cute outfit, like a fairy outfit, was it?
Oh, yeah, magical flower fairy.
Sure.
Yeah. But long before the punchline comes, you've seen it coming because the character has appeared earlier. It's Chekhov's Chinese restaurant owner who looks like a dog. Eventually,
he's the cutest dog in the show. So, are those his ears? What are those things?
That's his hair.
That's his hair. Okay. Yes. Because they look like dog ears.
That's the idea.
I know that's the idea, but it's just like, yeah, yeah. Obviously,
he like, have you ever seen a dog run a Chinese restaurant? That's a pretty good trick.
I've never seen a dog with two employees, no.
Yeah. Actually, what's his face? He also fades into the background, so we keep forgetting his name. Ashiba's friend, whose mother is the actor. She's emceeing the competition. She's doing a pretty good job of saying, who have you got here? Ashiba has brought his dog, Goma-chan. Yes, that's definitely a dog. I've never seen this dog before. It's definitely not a seal. Show us what you got, Ashiba and Goma-chan.
Yeah, she manages to avoid using the word dog because she doesn't want to be incorrect. But her reaction of, oh my God, it's he's not a dog. Can you believe? Everyone's really impressed with her acting ability.
No Sugal this episode.
No. But I mean, like, every time we see him, his life is a constant terror. So
well, yeah, I wouldn't want to know what kind of dog show he's going to. If it's going to involve some kind of parade of terror beasts.
I mean, yeah. The last time we've seen him involved with dogs, he was being menaced by wolves. So, I mean, it's probably that again.
Yeah. Or it would be all the different tidy yetis in different costumes.
I feel bad I missed out on that part now.
Anyway, next up, sorry, which did have yeti-type monsters in it, it's Magical Circle Guru Guru, Episode 9. Mystery, Ruins of the Migu Migu Clan. Once again, a lot of things happened.
Yeah, I'm trying to compartmentalize it all.
They find a message from
Kukuri's parents.
Kukuri's parents. They do a dance. She learns some more symbols, one of which can summon a UFO, which then made me realize, oh, the Migu Migu clan are aliens.
Yeah, I think all their shit is like aliens and magic.
Yeah, it's like crop circles is what she's drawing. But it had to literally see her riding on a UFO to make me go.
Yeah, and everyone's like, that doesn't look like a bird. Everyone's calling it a bird, but it doesn't look like a bird. It's like, yeah, it looks like a big green UFO. And the multi-eyed thing that came out of the ground, some sort of alien monster. Because again, it didn't look like the standard demons we've seen so far, which are just like weird-looking cartoony guys.
Yeah. Well, also like in that room, it's full of toys. So it's apparently like her nursery before she got moved away, and all the objects there are they're things that get summoned by her circles then in other episodes. So she's taking some kind of inspiration from all of them. Ray turns up, is about to do serious things, but then gets too caught up in his own show button.
What's his nickname for Kukuri again?
Pink Bomb.
Because
she blows up, she's a girl, ergo pink, so Pink Bomb.
Yeah. That's his logic, all right. He summons two pretty badass gods, but then he keeps summoning god versions of himself. Yeah.
It's trapped in the statues of...
Gets trapped in her muscles.
the gods of muscle, which are also me. Yeah.
Anyway, they've arrived at the tower, and they're going to tackle this dungeon now.
I like the way the dungeons all kind of work like a old school...
A puzzle room?
Yeah, but also a lot like an old school D&D dungeon of like, here is a room with a trap. How do you get past this trap?
There's a rule in this room. See if you can figure out the puzzle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the best joke is when they go in and they see those creepy dolls.
Yeah.
Warning them of the dangers. And then old man North just hits them with a broom.
Yeah, knocks them off a shelf with a broom. It's like, oh, that's that problem dealt with.
Thank God they're gone, huh?
He's surprisingly useful in this episode. I think it's like he's in the party, but no one will admit it.
But often his lack of tact comes in useful, such as just then.
Well, he has that magical item because they accidentally sold all the rest of them in the prior episode.
Oh, yes, I forgot that.
Of Chidori's inheritance. It was caught in his grass skirt, fortunately. And they're like, isn't that great, Chidori? Let's not think about where it was. dear. Yeah, because yes, it comes in a very useful.
It had been inside the device that I forgot his name, Toma had turned into that weapon.
One of her other inheritance things, the thunder cannon or whatever he called it.
So, yeah, the first room is to get past this maid.
Yeah, the Iron Maid. And I suppose they didn't just go straight up and go maiden or whatever, but which you have to ask her permission to continue or something.
While sitting down. You can't just ask her
because
permission.
Because that's polite.
Yes.
Yeah. Your guests here.
I'm gonna figure that out, though.
They did. I did like the thing at the standard again. The D&D thing is like, okay, I've got an idea. Maybe if we do this, it'll work.
Yeah. But unlike D&D, at one point, Cookery has to rush off to go to the loo because there's.
Sometimes you have to do that in the middle of a session. That's not the weirdest.
There's no toilets in a dungeon. But I like the way it looks like they all think she's just going to go round the back of the tower. Actually just summons the UFO to fly back to that old man's house.
And that gets
toilet.
Written down into legend.
Yeah. That I was visited by the legendary bird. Then there's a... it's like a stone bell type thing. He'll get... he'll be very rude to you, but the angrier you get at him, the bigger he gets.
The more dense he gets, yeah. So he'll even block the way more just because he's so rude and he's really getting your gut.
So they get past that by pretending, by acting like what he's accusing them of being.
So it's not an insult because we are that thing?
Yes, we're acting like chimps. So when you call us chimps, it's no longer an insult. We won't get bothered by it.
But they could have just let it, you know, not take the insults. But yeah, they're all very quick to anger, I suppose.
Yeah, so it gets small enough for them to get past, but then Raid comes in and gets mad at it, and so it grows and blocks his way again.
And he knows his way through the dungeon. He knows all the traps. He's like, oh shit, I forgot that thing gets bigger. Yeah.
Then they meet a grass spirit, whose
that
name
was saved by Chidori's kid parents. I should say.
Chidori, Cookery.
God
damn it.
Wrong little girl.
Tiny girls.
Yeah. It's catching me now. And it has like a grass room. Like a I guess a, what would you call it? Like a save point room or something?
Yeah, something like that. And is that where it ends? There's like some romantic stuff with Cookery and Nike.
Okay. Oh, they're using that magic lipstick that we forgot to mention earlier.
Oh, yes.
magic chat stick, I think, is what it gets subtitled to, which I was like, that's a pretty good pun.
Yeah, of course, I could give it to Nike, but ooh, hey there, big boy. And then, like, you know, Thomas.
Every time someone passes that bit in the dungeon, yeah.
As I'm fighting the monsters and just constantly playing the background, this is the starting point. Hey, big boy, this is the starting point. Hey, big boy, knock it off.
Good stuff.
Also, they added sound effects to the opening this week.
Yeah, that's right.
I was thinking, yeah, is it doing the JoJo thing? It's like, are we leading up to a big finish?
Yeah. We're not even halfway through the series yet, Dwight.
I know. That's why I was like, that's kind of an odd place to do the sound effects opening.
Yeah. I also noticed this time, too, our folks have pointed it out as well, that at the start of the credits, and when they're over the world map, it zooms down to where they currently are in the world.
Yeah, I only spotted that this time as well. It's a weird one, because I guess I hadn't been noticing before, because this is like the third continent they're on or something, is it?
Are we sure it was doing it before?
It was. I went back and checked.
Okay.
Yeah, because I saw people mention it. I was like, okay, have we just not been noticing, or has it have because of the sound?
Is this the first time
added,
it's moved?
Was it the
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Time.
As always, I'm sure there was many, many things we missed.
Yeah. the best bit at the end is nice and all. It's nice because, Cookie does a little thing with a jazzstick on this ocarina flute thing they've gotten to stick, you know, and it's kind of, they get the burgeoning relationship between herself and Nika, and then Nika's like, what a nice gesture. And then zoom all the way down, like 20 stories to Gipple, sit outside going, sincerity, no.
Yeah, he does that several times in this episode.
Because the thing we forgot to mention last week is Cookery losing control of her Guru Guru, which was solved this week.
Oh, yeah, Jesus. I forgot about that, too.
That was the point of the dance scene, was she learned that she has to dance as she's drawing the circle, which then brings back Iruku.
Mm. She had something like, "See, I was teaching."
Name is exactly the opposite way around as Cooker's name.
Yeah. It's like, I was teaching you to dance too. It's like, yeah, everything seems to be leading her on this very linear path, yeah. Which is fine.
And but, we check in with what's her face, the priestess as well.
Very
briefly.
Very briefly, but we hadn't seen her for a few episodes.
But she's reacting to all these ancient friggin' demon god things being released.
Yeah. Is it Siren they're going to see in this tower?
Yes.
Because it's the air demon or whatever it is. Yeah.
Something like that. Okay, next up, Haybot, episode 48, Screw Island's Last Day, in which the finale continues apace as we get some attempt of explanation, but not before Haybot has lowered your expectations by saying these sort of things never live up to what you... the truth is yada yada twist is such a cliche and usually not followed by anything too special. So, the truth is that Haybot is a toy.
We knew that, though.
What?
Yes, we knew that, yeah.
I was having a drink of something there, and I was about to do a spit take.
So, in this episode, the black Nezherus who are still around are trying to unscrew the two screws which are keeping Screw Island tethered to Earth, and if they do that, it will allow the dimension screw to wipe everything from existence. And then, which kind of does happen, people start disappearing. Fine, the woman from the very first episode who appears to be behind it all, shows up. Then somehow everyone's back, and they're all back at the rundown hut that Nezheru and Haybot live in. But Fine is now no longer demonic and trying to kill them, and she gives some explanation of what's been going on. And apparently in 2016,
this show was commissioned?
Well, no, not even before the show was commissioned. I suspect might be next week.
Right.
We learned that on Mount Ace, from a certain manufacturer on Mount Pandai, there was an eccentric toy maker named Ace Oka, who made slightly weird toys. Everyone's on check Twitter, and apparently people seem to think Ace Oka is representing Kaori Oka from Bandai, who's been on the credits list of Haybot from day one. So they assume it was her idea.
Specific, yeah.
The thing which I think people know her from before was a DS game called, I believe, Dual Love, which was a game where you showered boxes. It's a dating sim, and the big gimmick was that all the boys, you could peek at them in the shower and give them back rubs, and carefully, their genitalia was hidden by the gap between the two screens of the DS. That was how the censorship worked.
Right.
So, that mind is also apparently responsible for Haybot. Anyway, so apparently she made the prototype for Haybot, switched it on, Haybot Zero, and instead of releasing all these hilarious gags, it released a massive amount of screw energy, rewriting the entire universe into this screw-based universe that we've been seeing in the show. So she is the originator. Fine is the Terminator. They introduce another phrase, which I can't remember, which hasn't been properly explained yet.
Maintainer?
No, it's like the something objector or something.
Mm.
It kind of sounds like it was going for like a Hindu mythology thing, where it was creator, maintainer, and destroyer.
Mm.
Could be, because that would make sense if... Because they say Fine's role as the Terminator emerged from her other role, which does seem to be... was in charge of the bogey aliens and the dick-nosed aliens who seem to be governing the dimensional screw. So you might be onto something there, Niall. It could just be the translation is a little wonky. And so they made all the young heroes, the new Vokabot quartet, even though there's eight of them. The Screw King stood down, and now the awesome fine screw is the new Screw King. And the MC Screw, because of the Chain Screw Kings, changed his design slightly and has a different voice actor now. Previously, in a flashback, when Saturn was the Screw King, he also had a different voice actor and a different slightly different character design. I guess that might be explained next week. I don't know how many more episodes. I'm guessing one or two is left. Because I'm trying to think what day... I think they did announce when all the tokusatsu things are moving time slots. So I think that might be the 1st of October. So there's probably two more episodes of Haybot. Maybe three at a push.
Just for the timing of things, like...
Yeah, but remember, nothing's replacing it, because it's scorched earth. Nothing can replace it.
I suppose in which case, the probably let us run... You could get three of us in that case, then.
Yeah, I just can't quite remember whether it was the 8th or the 1st that they were moving Kamen Rider and the Super Sentai show. I think they're bumping them later in the morning. Anyway, I'm sure they'll wrap everything up, because they are doing a surprisingly good job of making sense of all the nonsense they've put things through. It's just how far beyond the fourth wall will they go? Probably not that far, because it's like these are obvious stand-ins for the real people and the real companies, but they're not going so far as actually calling the company Bandai or giving the toy designer her real name.
I mean, like, you don't want to pull a Grant Morrison and trap yourself in the universe.
Yeah. Now, Grant Morrison was who I thought about as I was watching it.
Because then someone else ends up writing him, and he's like, ah, fuck. Yeah.
Okay, next up, Vatican Miracle Examiner, episode 10, The Ghosts of Past Appeared. It's almost taken a leaf out of Guru Guru's book in the amount of stuff which happens in this episode.
Oh, God, there's so many fucking characters named that it shows diagrams, and I need fucking diagrams around me going like, okay, who's this? He's her boyfriend who was involved with this, but now he died, but she's involved, and it's like, oh, Jesus, fuck.
But it's kind of going, so this character, we're dead. Oh, he's dead. Okay. Well, if you look up this person, you might find them. Okay, where are they? They're also dead, so don't get to bother with that either.
Weird circumstances. What happened to her? Well, she went crazy, and this other one was hit by lightning. It's like,
And the crazy one is... So basically what we're discussing here are the four people who we saw in the VHS tape in the first... episode,
yes,
of this arc.
Its relevance has finally come up.
Yeah, so it's like, let's say 33 years ago.
32 or 33? Yeah.
And so it turned out that only one of the people died, the one who we saw get beheaded. Well, let's say we don't see him get beheaded, we see his head bounce on the floor. As somebody points out, it was quite unusual, quite remarkable.
The camera he was holding caught his own head being chopped off.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we learned that the other man in the video is the priest from the church who's gone missing. And then we learned that he started dating the guy who's was beheaded's girlfriend while his own girlfriend went insane.
I thought his girlfriend was the one struck by lightning.
No, that's his second girlfriend. That's the one who survived without going insane. Later gets struck by lightning and killed.
Yeah. Sorry,
Just before her wedding day as well.
Coincidentally, sure.
Then later on in the episode, we discover the priest has apparently crashed frozen through a cow shed.
What appears to be a haunted cow shed initially, because all the cow's eyes are glowing, but it's just the regular cow shed, yeah.
Yeah, they're
just... The guy came in with a lamp, so...
Initially, I thought he was made of stone when they first show that, and I was like, okay, fine, whatever, Vatican Miracle Examiner, you do what you want. But no, he's frozen.
Now I picked up the frozen...
I mean, like, the entire situation was so weird. I was just like, that's maybe what's happening. But I love the detective's later explanation. It's like, obviously, he was frozen on top of the Matterhorn and then lobbed several miles into this farmer's cow shed.
Araka, I was like, how could that happen? It's a joke, Araka. Jeez.
I didn't think it was a joke because they had a diagram for that.
I know, but again, Ed's going to go on this program. You wouldn't know. Does kind of showing some of by his, I guess, more sheltered upbringing. Because when the fucking
when he has the diagram of explaining two couples, like their other halves disappeared under mysterious circumstances, and then what was remained went got together. And he's like, "What does that mean?" He's like, "I'll explain it to you later."
Maybe when you're older, even though we're not that far apart in age.
We're grown ass men. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 3 years. There's also, they introduced another guy who was like a mate of one of the guys who was going around harassing, but he's now also dead. Apparently died in a car crash.
But he was living with this woman who's disappeared. Yes. So she might have something to do with the situation.
And even though he died in a car crash, we are provided with what he looked like when he was older.
Yeah.
As a picture as well.
Well, they did it with everyone else, so...
Bill Suskins and the local detective show up, and it's like, we got video of the murder taking place in the church.
I love how fucking plain that video is.
But yeah, it's just like a stationary like CCTV camera type of job.
A clown running at a child, slashing him with his giant fucking scythe, and a priest going, "Holy shit!" And then both of them running away.
It's not even that. It's what are you doing here?
Yeah, that's true. Actually,
he knew who.
The clown was.
And turns out Bill Suskins knows as well, because the clown, he
made
was very
a fatal
sloppy,
mistake.
Left his fingerprints behind on the counterfeit money, which was clutched in the hand of the child.
Which is why he's investigating a crime in Italy in the first place.
Also because apparently
fingerprints belong to.
Yes, it Julia. Dun dun dun! He didn't die.
Gasp!
What?
But was he the clown previously? Is he somehow keeping himself looking young by replacing his organs or something? Maybe that's why he's got all those organs in the basement.
Is that why he had an albino child locked underneath this church? Was he coming for the child's organs with his massive slash hook? Who can fucking say?
Well, it's all tied to a massive international crime between the downfall of the United States of America, which is why it is successful in the FBI investigating a case of not jurisdiction.
Yes, the money showed up in, let me see if I can remember, Las Vegas, Chicago, New
Boston.
York, and Boston. Yeah. And it's like, oh, those are the same four cities this logo has shown up in. My goodness, it's all coming together.
Yes,
and they also, very stupidly.
They figure out the child must have been within the church, in some caves beneath the church, so I assume.
Yes, because the last things he ate were centipedes and worms.
That's it, yes.
And look, his skin's so pale, he mustn't have ever seen the sun. Of course, it's the most obvious solution.
They figure out the statue as well. It got some special paint on it, which they found.
Although there's something to do with the dust, which I'm going to guess is just hallucinogens. Drugs. At this stage.
Well, yeah, because they notice that when people are seeing it, their temperature's slightly raised and their pulse
raised. The special thing he got from the thing, besides whatever's to measure the whatever the dust is Fitbits for everyone.
Yes.
Shit.
And also at the end, Hannibal Lecter, Bashir and Hannibal Lecter sent them a parcel, which we don't see what's in there, but they're going to go to follow the same track that the people in the video took, which handily the cop has converted into a digital video and put on his phone.
Well, I figured it was just like a YouTube video that was popular at the time or something.
And they're like, well, the Bill Suskins is like, well, if we see that clown, I'm going to fill it full of lead.
I did like the thing of the priest is like, you're going into the haunted forest? And he just turns around and is like, that's right, we're going to find a demon kind of thing. And I'm just like, you guys are fucking ridiculous.
Well, I assume in their heads they've already kind of figured out.
Oh, yeah, they're really bullshitting the priests. Yes. Yeah. But they're just playing it up, like, because they keep giving each other knowing glances. It's like, yeah, we got this.
But so you're right. They definitely play Haraga up as being a lot more naive in this episode.
He's book smart, but he's not feet smart.
Well, I don't know.
I guess that because the other guy is book smart, literally.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
Haraga was street smart enough to swap his holy water for sulfuric acid.
Well, I mean, is that street smart or is that fucking crazy? To me, it sounds a little crazy.
Just fights really dirty.
He knows science good. That's pretty much it. Oh, and Jesus. That's the other one, of course. I really enjoy this show, dude.
Yeah, I see people complaining about the ridiculous Dutch angles. I'm saying more ridiculous Dutch angles.
There was an angle where it was doing the standard, this is a static shot, but everyone's fucking scrolling. And your man, the freaking book nerd guy, his face was like looking down from the top of the screen, like scrolling upward, as if he was lying down on the ceiling for the equivalent. Like, and I was like, what is it with this fucking angle? It's crazy. It's I love it.
They're just talking to each other. Why is it the eat-for-all? You don't know
because
what the angle is for,
talking's very
do you?
Boring without yes. these slight scrolls and Dutch angles.
Yep.
That's what you come for.
It's the old Wollywood. How many was it? 22 ways to make boring dialogue look interesting in comics.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is the only show this week which looked like it had been outsourced in terms of the animation. But I think still the actual layouts and the way everything was set up, I did still appreciate, even if some of the faces were a little off in places.
Ooh,
a little off models. Yeah. And like foreheads too big or yes. some kind of thing slightly off. Yeah.
There's a Bill Suskin shot which really stood in my head as like, he's got a giant head in that picture.
Well, I mean, like, they'd get away with it if they started just going the whole crazy fucking angle thing. Like, you know, just get a fisheye lens in there, whatever. Just go crazy with your weird shots.
But that's a good segue to the other show I thought, which had got loads of outsourced stuff in this week, was Welcome to the Ballroom, Heat 10, Voltage. In which Shizuku actually did something. And we kind of got some idea of her state of mind for a change.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, the start of the episode is the brother and sister, they're kind of past and how they got started in dancing and how they ended up where they are now as kids and less professional dancers and that kind of thing. But we also kind of get an idea of her mindset and where she's coming from, which is nice. So it's doing the setup for all the other characters in this episode.
And I liked it was sort of mirroring what happened last week, where it was Tartara being the frame to show off Mako, but now Shizuku was actually trying to have, because Gaju was kind of thrown off his game by show last week, so now she's kind of taking it up the slack and actually kind of showing off what she has got, trying to elevate herself up instead.
Yeah, and she's making her partner look better by comparison, and there's several points where they're like glowering at each other, and I can't remember who makes the comment. It's probably Sengoku saying it's like, you can't even tell who the hell is challenging who at this stage. Because everyone's trying to up their game.
And the mum notices that Shizuku, in one of the dances, Shizuku is the one who's actually doing the leading.
Yeah,
it's like she's saying how the amateurs would recognize that you're the one holding up this adult man. And also the key thing is that tiny little flashback of Shizuku where we learn that I haven't got the list of names out.
Hyodo considers her not a partner but a rival.
But a rival, yes. And so that kind of that's the thing which has preyed on her mind, is that she can't keep up with this rivalry, but then she sees his reaction to her dance at the end of the episode, and then she's kind of realized, okay, I'm catching up with you again.
Yeah, from her point of view, it's like he's getting antsy because she's getting better and he's just sitting on the sidelines and he's not really able to take it. Yeah.
And of course, it's all, as they point out, it's Tatara is the one who's the catalyst for all these other people driving themselves forward. But yeah, that line about her being his rival is probably the key line of the show so far. And that probably explains why that character profiles we're giving them as everybody rival ratings as well as heroine ratings.
Because
I think I believe that's kind of the relationship that the character we haven't seen yet will have with Tatara. Is the pair of them will be partners, but they'll also be rivals.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're trying to better yourself from another person, but they're also trying to stand out as a dancer on their own regard. Yeah. Which, it's like we said earlier in the show, it seemed to be like, this is all about the leads, this is all about the guys, and the girls who are 50% of the fucking equation are getting nothing. But we're seeing more and more of that now, and it's the show's kind of peeling back those layers, and you're getting to see them.
But yeah, there's I can't remember exactly. There's still stuff that Sengoku's thinking and saying that makes you think, which makes me go, I really want to see his partner and what their relationship is. Because I suspect he's not like that around her, or...
At least he's like that quietly. You know, it's like, yes. I'm the main guy. It's like, you're 50% the main guy.
I think it helps having the mum there as well and seeing her point of view of somebody who's much more experienced.
That she kind of like looks at Sengoku as he looks down on these kids.
Yes.
Mm. Not looks down on, but like from a superior viewpoint, I suppose. Yeah,
yeah, because you kind of get the feeling with Sengoku that maybe he's not seeing in... the female dancers the same thing he sees in the male dancers.
He knows his own game, but he doesn't really get the other side of it. Yeah.
Whereas having the mum there, you kind of get a different viewpoint and different criticism and different recognition of what people are doing right.
Yeah,
but I will say, also, did see somebody point it out before I watched this episode, and a big problem with this show is particularly this episode, seemingly more noticeable than others, is the dancing doesn't match the music.
Yeah.
There was like a slow sort of lounge sampling, and they were going way too fast.
I mean, like, they needed a lot more smoother animation to get that part across. Yeah, definitely. From what I've seen in the preview, like, it seems like they put the money into next episode, and we're keeping it light on this one. Just a guess.
I'm guessing it was some outsourcing. I saw some people saying that it was, but there aren't, again, not as noticeable as on Vatican Miracle Examiner. But Vatican Miracle Examiner has a much lower bar of looking good than Welcome to the Ballroom does.
Yeah.
I think to me, it's like I've seen the kind of in their planning, they probably, I think that's going to be sort of the climax of this whole Tempeh Cup thing. So this is more like a bridge episode to get us there, because to kind of to go through like the final thing, which is like, you know, you're doing three dances in a row, or four dances in a row rather, all together, like all the teams on the floor at once. So
yeah, it's kind not of, individual. Kind of it's there's no breaks in between. Yeah,
but it kind of blitzed through the first few because we haven't. They don't really matter at all. But the last one, the quick step, that's what we've all been waiting to see.
yeah.
Okay, next up, Rage of Bahamut, episode 21, Vengeance, in which Alisand is somehow even more pathetic than he was last week, murdering a child.
Well, the really fucking, like, laying... you get how bad this guy is. And I mean, like, most of the cast just spend... Not to sound bad, but most of the cast spend the episode fucking crying, understandably fucking so. They don't move from the spot because it's like, what are we going to do? It's like, well, first let's be upset because this is very upsetting.
The first character to break down to tears is Azazel.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think he plays a hard game, but he's obviously a very emotional guy. Like, so everyone else is kind of like trying to wall it up. You don't see Jeanne d'Arc crying, but you do see her fucking the bags under the eyes from it, you know.
Yeah,
understandably. Yeah.
It was like, you know, the opening scene where you have like kind of slow motion rushing into the operating room, and it's get that kid on my table. I need to blood on the stand. Get that duck with the crown out of here. I'm my operating room. I don't need him right now.
Yeah, but all this done in, like, just dramatic music, no talking. She even has, like, a magical heart monitor and stuff. That was pretty cool, yeah.
I kind of, at the contrast, you know, revealing the operating here, she's just, like, frantic trying to get this, trying to rescue this child, but then, like, she also takes on the role of, like, the mortician and just the kind of tenderness but preparing the body for burial, like, and Jeanne d'Arc is in the room as well. It's like, all different kinds of grief. First, you know, things had to move on as well. Somebody has to, I guess, be the strong one here. And I suppose Rita, being a zombie who has been through this numerous times, including in her own existence.
Yeah, she can handle death because, you know, undead. That and her profession and everything. Yes, but
she is a necromancer, so they probably just want to be thankful that she let him live a peaceful death.
Yeah, I think it was really rough seeing... our main character just not be able to react emotionally, because like, she says it herself, like, I think so much has happened that something just broke inside me, and I was like, oh no.
Well, so it's sort of that thing when like you experience this kind of like trauma, it's kind of tragedy. Yeah. She's just going around tying knots because she doesn't know what to do with herself.
Just kind of antsy.
I know as well that if she just stops and sits down and molds over for like even a minute, it's all going to come crashing down top where she's just kind of keeping on moving and trying to forestall the inevitable like sadness is going to wash over her.
I mean, that's what happens again in her reminding herself of how did she ever think Moguru was a girl, you know, finding his old dress and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And just that's heartbreaking, yeah.
Mm. And primarily, most episode is we have three separate parties all plotting bloody vengeance against Cherryuchek, who they link to this via Alasan as his proxy.
Like, they never... there's a bit where Azazel says, like, I'm going to fucking kill him. But he does, like, stay back in case, like... in case Jeanne d'Arc, when she comes in the room, he's kind of like... And it's kind of like an unsaid, unless you want him, because then you can fucking have him, obviously. understandable, because fuck that guy, dude.
I know, but they both leap to the wrong conclusion about...
That's true.
...the motive.
Yeah. It's just like he was under orders from the king and that kind of thing, yeah.
It's just like, you know, this kind of really stupid, selfish act now is going to spur on, like, heaven coming down and just laying waste to the entire country, because that's when Jean just like, you know, goes up, I'm going up to the land of the gods right now. It's like, Gabriel, I'm back in. Ella's dead. Let's fucking do this thing. And
yeah, she basically demands, like, we're going to war. You're going to war with me right now. Let's go.
She gets at heaven's loudspeaker and just says, I'm going to come down when the twin moons align. I'm going to fucking destroy Cherryuchek. Anybody's on my side, gather here and we'll all take him out together. Anybody gets in the way, I'm going to fucking annihilate you.
The irony being, though, of course, is Cherryuchek, we learn, is not there.
Yeah. He's... Well, it's apparently broadcast like everywhere simultaneously. Yeah.
Because we learned earlier that he has snuck out and... he's on his way to Ebos, which is where Dwayne will not know because he hasn't watched the first season.
No.
That is where Bahamut is sealed.
Oh, shit. Okay. Going for the big guns.
Well, no, I believe that I think people's theory is that his plan is, because Bahamut is only sealed. Every so often, Bahamut gets out again.
Mm.
And then humans, devils, and angels have to somehow put all their differences aside and seal him once more. So what people seem to think might be the case is he's got this ancient weapon, he's going to unseal Bahamut and then blast Bahamut to kingdom come, so mankind no longer have to rely on angels and devils to see eye to
eye. That does seem to be his main plan, like to put humans on top and we'll manage without the gods and we'll manage on top of demons.
I'm not sure it's even on top, as just to remove the
right
having to rely on two diametrically opposing forces to come together in order to defeat this dragon, which is mainly going to kill humans.
Yeah. But to be fair, it seems the dragon kills everyone and hurts everyone.
Yes.
Nearly equally, yeah.
And that would kind of make sense of that being his big plot that he can't tell anybody about, because people would probably go, what the fuck are you doing? That's incredibly dangerous. Don't
unseal that fucker. Yeah.
Big turn for Nina as well, because after she lets all out, she seems kind of resolved and just packed up all the wagons saying, gotta find Cherryuchek and we gotta stop him. And Favre asks, how are you gonna stop him? And she does not answer that. Because she's not sure, but she's kind of thinking, stop him any way I have to.
Yeah.
That's the impression I'm kind of inferring anyway, because she's getting tired of people that she loves getting taken away, because when she's crying over Muguro's loss, she's also flashing back to when her father passed away too. So,
yeah,
she's probably getting tired of all of this grief and tragedy.
I think she says, like, I'm not going to let him take away any of the people I care about anymore. That kind of way. I think it's something like that.
Mm.
You've Azazel trying to, again, trying to summon a demon army.
Yes, he gets hit in the face with a book.
Just to kind of show the difference in power, I suppose, yeah. Because he's been quite a player up to this point.
Yes, Lucifer is perhaps the prettiest character in the show.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Which I thought was a good move. Mm. It was like, I was surprised. I don't think he was this pretty the last time we saw him in the show. So I think they
he's been working on it.
All out, yeah. I notice it's Sato, the chief director, did the sketch of him at the end as well. So I wonder if he worked on those particular scenes too.
Hmm.
As to like really drive home the character. And he did a good job. And he kind of basically he had to be argued into learning that Jean was also going to be making an attack. So if we ally with Heaven against Cherryo Chi, we might stand a chance.
I mean, like, he's mainly convinced by her announcing at everywhere simultaneously that I'm about to invade from heaven. Get ready. And the other part of it is that son of a bitch fucking going to the fucking Black Knights again and going like, hey, I killed the Holy Child. Pretty cool, huh? Why not promote me? And he's like, come here, kid. Let me show you what the Black Knights is. Because you can fucking, you know it's something horrible. And it is. It sucks.
Running away from the inside out. And he's like, oh, well, I didn't know it was going to involve that. Well, fine, you can... We'll stick you back in the fucking Orleans Knights again. That'll probably... that's good enough for you.
You can be the captain. You can be the captain of those motherfuckers. Who cares?
And then when we see him later, he's gone total Macbeth, staring at his hand.
Yeah. Fuck him.
Yeah.
Like, this episode, I think it was well done, and obviously, logically, I'm not like, fuck humans in general, but I was kind of thinking, like, Heaven's about to invade, fuck humanity and everything like that, and I'm like, yeah, kind of fuck humanity.
But no, Kaiser is still, he does not want to see anybody fight. He's going to try and stop these people fighting. And I'm going to guess, push come to shove, Favreau would probably, I think Favreau's going with Nigida to make sure
she doesn't go further than she should.
Yes.
Then it would change her irrevocably. Like, yeah.
You're going to do this by the book. Bring him in.
Yeah, I suppose just trying to protect her from the same shit that he's done, that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, of course, if he releases Bahamut, then I suspect there'll be different priorities.
Yeah, sure.
I suppose he already had to make that hard choice himself, so he doesn't want to hurt after Wider.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I could see him doing the deed rather than to save Nina's soul.
He was willing to do it earlier, so yeah.
We shall see. Yeah, it's pretty good episode. Felt back on top form all the way through in terms of animation as well as storytelling.
Definitely.
It's just like, so I was a little kind of taken aback how all these characters are just, well, I expected out of Azazel, but all of them are just like, forget trying to do this like the good or noble way, or just gonna fucking kill that guy.
Well, yeah, they were basically like that up to the prior to the credits of last episode. They were like, okay, we'll figure it out, and then they were just like, fuck him, which I think is somewhat understandable. Yeah,
it is, but at the same time,
I know they're wrong in who they're kind of blaming. Yes, it's one fucking random act of violence, I suppose, but. Yeah.
It is. I think it's clear that, and also it does make Kaiser perfectly clean either, because he just assumes that it couldn't have been Alessand. And then Favreau goes, yeah, I saw him running away. It was him.
He had a knife.
And then he's down on himself for never being able to properly understand Alessand's personality. Mm.
He does take it all on himself. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, this should be, I'm hoping for a good kind of payoff at the end of all of this. Otherwise, you just kill that child, so it's a catalyst to make everybody converge on this place for the final battle. It's like, that wouldn't be kind of adding much to the story, like thematically or anything like that, besides this shocking event to try and move it forward to this certain location, this certain place in it.
Yeah, I think that'd be kind of an ugly thing to do in terms of plot, but the rest of the show has been so good, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and I think they'll be able to pull it together.
Righty ho, and finally, there is no Dragon Ball Super, so we must talk about My Hero Academia, episode 35, Yayoi Rozu Rising.
There's a kind of hacky film title right there for her own spin-off comic, perhaps. Yes.
I think colon and then an R word is a cheesy title. Yeah, yeah.
And she only gets half the episode anyway, because...
I was surprised the other guys got as much as they got going, and I'm kind of glad they did, because those parts were enjoyable.
First off, Crow Boy and Frog Girl.
I made that joke, but everyone else did afterwards as well, I noticed. It's like, talking about Tokoyami, is like, yeah, he's really good at long range, but up close, he's got to work on that because he's very vulnerable then. What about Sue? An excellent student with no clear weaknesses.
Well, like, I've been watching it more and more, and she's basically Spider-Man. except frogs, obviously.
That line is actually foreshadowing something. Have you read how far ahead have you read, Dwayne?
Oh, I'm like at least two books, maybe three books behind now, because I said I'd stop reading it while I was watching the show, so I wouldn't be making the comparison.
So you've not seen the summer training camp.
I haven't gotten that far.
No, that line, I don't think I noticed it in the comic before. Maybe it wasn't in the comic, they've added it here. But no, that line has her being labelled as the ideal student and the good girl and the one who does everything everybody's supposed to be doing as a superhero is important. That is her role, particularly in contrast with everybody else who don't necessarily always do the right thing, do they?
Yeah. But that's it as well, let's just say it, she's usually the one who's calm under pressure and is able to analyze the situation, and
she works well with other people.
She keeps everybody on track so they don't fly off the handle.
She worked really good with your man, him tossing her in the air and then her grabbing him when she's in midair, that kind of thing. So they're kind of doing, that was pretty sweet. Yeah.
No. And also a good use of her lesser utilized ability to expel the contents of her stomach at will.
Yeah, I'm wondering, that and some other bits in this episode, was this directed by some more pervy motherfuckers? Because there's some shots in this and I'm just like, God damn it, the internet's going to have a field day with that.
I can't remember whether that's more disgusting in the comic, her regurgitating.
Yeah, it's. I think in thematically, it's supposed to come across as like, whoa, you'll go to that extremes to win. That's badass, because that's really horrible and embarrassing to have to do. Because
it's a last-ditch effort.
Yeah.
Actually, on that one as well, I really kind of like the design of ectoplasm. Because it wasn't to look at him, but he appears to be a quadriplegic.
Yes, he does have pegs for legs, and I'm not sure he has any arms.
Yeah, but he's still making clones and fucking schooling these two people who would, comparatively may have more impressive powers than he does, but it's the way he uses his really effectively. But I thought it was kind of nice that, somebody who has that kind of difficulty in their physiology can, even they can rise to become one of the top heroes in the nation.
Yeah, and again, it's like they have the maneuverability and that kind of, and the range and everything in comparison to him, but it's how he's using the powers that makes him such a threat. Yeah.
What after that then? It was
it's a shorter bit with
Ida. And who is his
Tailman?
Oh yeah, Tailman.
I'm gonna go by the superhero names. And that's how I'm gonna win. That was a pretty good bit, because I'm like, Ida, he'll just fucking run out. He'll be grand. But they go piggyback to get them both going. And your man has actually what's his name? Bulldozer or something?
Power loader.
Excellent. Guy with a digger for a face has dug loads of pitfalls and that kind of thing. But they actually have a pretty good move plan, which involves him basically toss kicking him past the finish line.
Yes. Yeah.
That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think these are all happening in a slightly different order to how they appeared in the comic as well.
Probably just the adaptation and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's probably wise, because they needed to maybe spend half episodes with Momo and Todoroki's merch, and then just need some other maybe shorter sequences just to fill up the first half of it, so then we could spend the latter half then dedicated to this one.
But with the first two, it feels kind of like they saw how that first match went down and how utterly freaking overpowered those students were, and you can see, it seems like they've kind of reacted to that, and they're trying to up their game for it, you know.
Mm-hmm. But they don't like win. They don't like triumph outright. You know, they are just
they really have to work for it.
Just getting in, scraping by, which is still impressive for a pair of teenage kids up against experienced professional heroes.
Yeah. I mean, like, you think, like, based in these, like, in a straight up fight, like, yeah, they wouldn't win, which is why we have to establish these winning condition rules. Oh, if you get a hang up on, you won. If you get past the finish line, you won. That kind of way, you know.
Yeah. Which is kind of what makes it as well, like, with the next one versus a Eraserhead, where obviously his power is, if he sees you, can negate your own powers, but it's everything else surrounding that, because if you just depended on that, you wouldn't get very far, I guess, if you wanted to do. So he just has trained himself to be a ninja, pretty much.
Yeah, I think someone says, are you a ninja or what the hell? Yeah, because, again, they mention his weird bandages things. Like, they don't know what they're made of, but he fucking uses them well.
Yeah. I forgot about his stunner shades as well.
So you can't see where he's looking. Ah, dear.
Yeah, I'm looking at the chapters here, and the Suyu Fumikage fight happens after the Midoriya Bakugo All Might fight in the comic.
Oh, really?
It's probably better to space it out the way they did for the sake of the show, yeah. Mm.
It's all about Momo here, though. It's kind of addressing horror. Lack of self-confidence or her loss of confidence.
Yeah, her shattered confidence. Because obviously she came in without having to be tested or anything, because her powers and her book smarts and everything were so damn good.
But so it's sort of Todoroki as well, and she's kind of compared herself off of him, because they both came in the exact same way, but he's just progressed and grown so much more in the same space of time, and she's feeling just left behind in the dust.
Well, I mean, like, we saw bits of her on-the-job training. It's not, I don't think that's going to help her at all, that kind of thing.
No. It
tells you part of what you might have to do professionally, but it's not like this isn't helping her grow where she needs to. Just her kind of doubting herself and that kind of thing. Her trying to come over that. And needing to... That was the other thing, wasn't it? Like, stepping up where... you need to, because she had a plan, but she doubted herself to the point where she didn't even tell Todoroki.
Yeah, that would be kind of a sort of stuff too. Mm. Even like a Eraserhead is thinking, this is supposed to be about building the students up, so I shouldn't go too hard on her, because I'm trying to bring her back up now, but I can't act like, you know, I'm letting her win either. She's kind of having a bit of a dilemma as a teacher about what he should do.
Yeah, and I did like the bit with Recovery Girl, where she's kind of like, you old softy kind of thing. Because it was like, it's not clear if he not let her win, but gave her a situation in which she could win, or if he was like, no, I was, it actually makes perfectly logical sense why I did that move right then. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that, leaving that unsaid, because it's like, yeah, he's obviously a good teacher, so it's kind of like maybe he give them a tiny bit of slack, just enough to kind of push her to being a better student.
Yeah, just kind of pressuring her just enough that it would, you know, because her main thing is she gets flustered and she ain't able to make anything, but she needs like to be able to kind of think and plan faster, you know, as the situation demands.
Mm.
So, of course, you want a time to think carefully about all things you need to do, but so this kind of pressuring her to think up, come up with a strategy and a quick effort, and then, you know, see what happens. And then he would just react accordingly based upon that. Just kind of want to see what she would do given that. And like I said, may have given her a little bit of a gimme there. But
it's only because
right
she made a very slight mistake, like basically like a miss of timing. That's the extent of her failure in her plan. Because other than that, her plan was fucking good.
But overall, she did the right thing, so I guess that's good enough. Because it's kind of like, you know, again, getting better teaching. It's not about getting the right answer. It's showing your work. That's what gets you the most marks on the test.
Yeah.
Yes, it looks like next week we get a lot of everybody else who aren't Midoriya's fights.
Yeah. To get into this fabled Mineta encounter.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether they're going to cut that short.
Yeah.
Because my memory is that it takes a decent chunk of a chapter up. I'm just going to have a double check to see whether that's true. Because that does seem to be in next week's episode, but it also appears to be a lot of everybody else as well.
Hmm.
So we shall have to see whether he's going to get his just desserts in one way or another.
Every horned dog has his day.
We will get to see the principal in action, though, as well, won't we? Because he's one of the challenges.
We get the I think it's, is it the end of the episode or is it like the post credits?
We see some of Ochako and the belly button dandy.
I'm always sparkling or whatever his name is. Yeah,
where I like that he's the one character who's noticed that she's got a crush on Midoriya.
Yeah, it's like, but you're so self-obsessed. How have you noticed this thing in anyone around you? He's bringing it up in such an inappropriate time as well. It's like, dude, head in the game. dear. Yeah.
I didn't know his costume actually allowed him to shoot the laser beams out of more than just his belly button.
That's actually a pretty good design.
That deflects him around. He can shoot him out of his knees, I think, in this one.
It's his feet or his knees. I can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah, he gets 11 pages worth to his fight. Does old Mineta.
Okay.
Depends on how quickly that action is going, I suppose.
Well, they may do the same where they give over like, the latter half of the episode to just that one.
Could probably be
enough to see that. Mm.
Yeah, it's in a right old different order. Yeah, because even the two guys we saw in the last episode.
The sugar guy and Kirishima.
Yeah. The end of theirs is much later.
Yeah, I feel like they wanted them to be like the first fail because, again, to kind of show you the stakes. Yeah. Mm.
I don't mind, as someone who hasn't read that far into the comic, I didn't really notice. I didn't notice it kind of hurting the flow.
Oh no,
of
it definitely
the
doesn't.
Narrative
no.
at all.
It just took me by surprise having read it. I was like, this seems different.
Well, maybe that's it. It's, even if you've read the comic now, they're all the results switched up, so you got to watch it too to see what happens. Yeah, exactly. It's even a way to do it.
Well, it changes. I'm sure they'll flesh stuff out like they did in the tournament.
But it changes the perspective of. Our hero as well, because obviously he's watching these fights happen, and with the way he gets thinking, it'll change like what his fight is like, because having seen all these other classmates go through theirs, you know.
Yeah. Oh yes. This is the big difference though in the comic is that a lot of them are taking place simultaneously.
So yeah,
that's what plays into Mineta's story, is that he's hearing everybody passing these exams while he's in the.
Okay. I was him kind of with Midoriya, and obviously this is going to be some kind of exam where he's going to kind of call upon all the information he has, all the things he's learned, maybe from other students and watching heroes. And now we've got this other footage, we can just insert in as his flashback thoughts. So why he's thinking about that when he eventually get to his episode.
You see, I can't even remember it taking that long for them to go up against All Might.
Okay.
Well, maybe they're like one third or fourth in the order rather than the very last one as we have here in the anime.
Yeah, it looks like... Let's go. No, they did get a fair chunk, so I'm going to guess, it would probably just be one whole episode based on...
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But we're still aware of that yet.
As
I said, still enjoying us.
Three episodes left.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this week's one. I thought the pacing worked quite well for splitting it up between the different tests.
Yeah, I'm going to guess there's two episodes left of the tests, and then we'll get the the final episode, which is
set up for the next arc and whatnot. Yeah,
sort of, but it's more like a proper ending to the Stain arc.
Oh, okay.
It's a thing. I feel like they've got to pay off this arc rather than come back to it first thing on the next season.
Okay, fair enough.
So I mean, looking at the ratings, it's been going up and down, like quite wildly fluctuating.
Not like consistently up?
No, but it has been getting over 4 in some weeks. So it's not like it's been consistently below 4, but sometimes it's also been like 2 point something. So
right, okay.
It's not been as consistent as Time Bokan 24 was.
Are people just tuning in for the very best from the comic or something?
Maybe. Or maybe there's maybe it's influenced by which week. Maybe it's influenced by the weeks when Detective Conan's a repeat. I realise that's probably what's influencing those ratings. Now I'm saying it will be lower ratings the week when it's a repeat because no one will tune in for Detective Conan, so they won't bother. They won't catch a few minutes of this.
Oh dear.
Oh jeez.
That could well be the problem.
What a solution.
Well, yeah, I wish they'd put those. The annoying thing is we don't get the repeats on Crunchyroll, these remastered episodes they do.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Instead, you just go for weeks without an episode of Detective Conan. And then when it comes back, it's a non-canon story. And you're like, oh, come on, get back to the canon stuff. Anyway, that's everything. I do believe Dragon Ball Super is back next week. And I believe everything else is as well. So we'll have a packed week. But before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain.
Ooh, well, as threatened, I suppose. And operating purely on the basis that this was the same format used for the Mr. T cartoon TV show to be previously enjoyed, is Chuck Norris' Cry Commandos, which took that same kind of idea, but for whatever reason, somehow less enduring, or did not run as long anyway. We're going to find out why that may be.
And if you go there now, we have up 2 shorter bits with Trava Fist Planet and... I've forgotten the name of it again.
Izuna Ichigeki.
Yes.
Two little short things that probably would have been too short for themselves. We're going to roll them up into one because they appeared to have, prior to viewing, some crossover, but may not really have besides being fun, shorter cartoons.
Oh, they're just 2 great tastes that work together.
And on Dynamite in the Brain right now, you can find an episode all about Your Name with Niall as a guest. Yes. Well, part of the episode, yes, is about Your Name. Niall and also Grace Chan are on there as guests, and we have a spirited discussion on differing views of how good this greatest anime of all time is.
It's pretty okay.
I think we run the gamut of opinions on this. And then next week we will have another famous anime podcast. This time it will be about famous anime time travelers. Except annoyingly, there was one I realised I left out, which is the one Jaguar from Concrete Revolution was based on.
Right. That's just a little time paradox then, that's fine.
Yes. We'll just have to do another one at some point where we just do exactly the same things again. otherwise, we'll be back here next week for more Let's Go. Goodbye.
Bye.
See ya.